Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn.
Are you ready for learning? I'm ready for learning, sort of, maybe. I've had enough hours to wake up. I am sitting here with Professor Alexi Drummond, who is the Director for the Centre of Computational Evolution in the University of Auckland. How are you?
I'm great.
It's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day.
We're going to talk about computational evolution. Just what on earth is that, please?
Right. Well, you know, in this age of this digital revolution we have, most of biology has become a very much computational and mathematical affair. We've got sequences of DNA coming out of our ears, and the only really the amount of DNA data that we've collected on all sorts of things from around the world is quite astonishing. There's huge public databases, and the only way to make sense of it is to put it through computer algorithms to try and understand what how things are related, and so our group at the Computational Evolution Centre are involved in developing software that can allow biologists to understand the relationships between different individuals, different species.
So when you take something like a sequence of DNA, with regards to evolution, are you finding a very old piece of DNA from a species and comparing it to the species now and seeing what's changed over time? Or,
well, our software is very general and you can apply it to lots of problems. And the problem of ancient DNA is a very fascinating one. It actually allows you to see not progress so much as the change of evolution through time a little bit more directly than you otherwise can. But you're always trying to retrospectively see what has occurred through time to give us the DNA that we see today. In the case of ancient DNA, it's obviously very difficult to get that DNA out of old material, and so there's all sorts of extra problems to try and understand how much damage has occurred and what of the changes in that DNA are real and which are an effect of just the process of degradation over time. And so there's extra modelling that goes into that. But
so it's not like a lossless file then, it does kind of degrade over time.
Absolutely. And in the case of ancient DNA, if you want to look at Neanderthals, we now have the scientific community has assembled a number of complete genomes of Neanderthals, but they were you know, in pieces of only a few, sort of 50 or 100 characters, nucleotides, these little letters that make up your DNA string, and you have to assemble them back up in something that's 3 billion letters long.
Oh, across. God.
And that's a very difficult computational task. So that's what you have to do before you even start trying to compare it to what human genomes look like today.
So computers are very helpful then.
They are. They're very helpful. And they run pretty hot when they're trying to work these things out.
Yep, lots of coolant dossing around. So viruses apparently are a great thing to study because they change faster than other organisms. Is this correct?
Yeah, I mean, people think about the evolutionary process perhaps as something which is a slow and patient process, but in fact it can be quite furious. If you look at most of the viruses that cause infectious disease in humans, for instance, many of them are RNA viruses, and these are viruses that are copying themselves every few days or more frequently. Every single time they make a copy, they generally make an error, and that means many of those viruses that, don't work, but some of them do, and that change accumulates very rapidly. So for instance, in the case of flu, from, you know, 2 years ago to now, the amount of change that's occurred in the flu virus is about the same as the difference between humans and chimpanzees. So they're evolving about a million times faster than anything, you know, than what we might think of as, you know, other species are evolving at.
But that's the same kind of process of evolution, but just sped up incredibly?
Well, what's amazing is that, you know, although there are many interesting differences in how different species and living things evolve, the fundamental process of replication and error and selection are occurring all the time in all of these different organisms, and so that means that there's fundamental similarities to the mathematical modelling. And you can look at how flu evolves over the course of 5 or 10 years, and you can just see it in my career. You know, these things have happened one year after the next. We've collected sequences, and we can reconstruct the tree of all of these different flu lineages that have spread around the world, and many have gone extinct, and some have proliferated and spread every single season. You know, a few lineages of flu kind of inherit the sea of
the
human hosts
are
for
right
the,
and they
for
just
the next.
Open
yeah, they're the ones that have the right changes to be more successful at spreading through the global immunity immune system. And but if you zoom out and look at other species through the fossil record, take an example I've looked at recently, the penguins, and we have about 20 species today, but if you go back through 60 million years of evolution, there's been dozens and dozens of species of penguins that have come into existence and been successful and spread and then gone extinct, and very much the genetic and evolutionary patterns of penguins over tens of millions of years is not too different from a mathematical perspective to what you see in flu over 10 years.
So was there any particular reason that you chose to study penguins? Is it something to do with the conservation of? Because obviously their habitat is changing much faster than it used to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, the type of... We're really meta-scientists in some sense. We develop tools that allow scientists to study a whole range of different systems. But we get interested in certain examples and work on them ourselves. So, you know, we've looked at a whole range of different things. Our current research is actually really focused on a very old problem of human evolution, because in the case of humans, we kind of think we know everything already. You know, we're chimpanzees is our closest living relatives, and the common ancestor was 5 or 6 million years ago, and Neanderthals are closely related, but a different species which we may have admixed with and had a little bit of genetic exchange.
Yeah, we've all seen Planet of the Apes. We all know
right.
How
so, but it turns out that actually the more we know about both. Human genetics, we've now sequenced thousands and thousands of human genomes completely, and there's pretty big projects like Genomics England where they're going to sequence 100,000 human genomes. We're collecting more and more of this data, and we're starting to get more accurate pictures of the mutation rate in humans, how quickly we're changing. On the other hand, we're looking at the fossil record, and in some ways these things are starting to actually grow apart rather than grow together in what the picture is. So mutation rates that we've now started to measure directly in humans, some studies are saying that they're too slow to explain the genetic difference, for instance, between humans and chimps, even though it's only 1 or 2%. And so we're trying to develop these new models that can really formally combine the sort of rich fossil evidence that we're now collecting. People are doing 3D models of skulls, and it's getting much more computational on that side alongside the genetic data to try and reconcile why it is that we still haven't quite pinned it down.
And so this will have repercussions for extrapolating that data into the future, right? And how we deal with disease and health and things like that, yeah?
Yeah, well, we can unpack that a little bit. People probably know that in some rough way that our DNA codes for things called genes, and our genes somehow contribute to how we look and our eye color and hair color and all those kind of things.
All that sort of stuff. This earlier this morning.
Yeah. But the other thing which your genome is doing, kind of by accident, is recording history, because certain changes in your genome, in your DNA, don't really have much of an effect on your phenotype, on how you look and act and behave, but it does kind of create a little digital mark of who, you know, which lineage you come from,
right,
and where you're descended from. And so we use those kind of little marks of history. But you're absolutely right that evolution is continuing now, as it always has. It's a common thing for people to sort of say, oh, you know, humans aren't really evolving anymore because, you know, we're not being chased around by tigers and lions out in the savannah. But it's obviously the case that we still are, and that, so understanding these evolutionary processes definitely will give us some understanding of what could happen in the future. And I think it's, although I said before that viruses evolve a million times faster than humans, it sort of depends how you measure it, because humans copy their genomes with much higher fidelity.
Right.
You know, we've got to copy 3 billion nucleotides, and RNA virus only has to copy 10,000.
Right.
If you copy 3 billion, you still end up making a few mistakes because there's just so many you're copying. So in fact, every one of us has a handful of mutations that are totally unique. We didn't get it from our mother, we didn't get it from our father. It was just when the copying happened, there was a few mistakes. There are mistakes. And that's happening every single generation and every single person. So you think about the millions of people being born every year, that's a huge amount of evolutionary exploration of you know what it could mean to be a human in the future. And almost all of them are dead ends, but a few of them are going to help us perhaps in future environments.
This is bloody fascinating stuff, but sadly I'm going to get bumped off soon for Morning Glory. But if you guys want to know more, Alexei is presenting a talk titled Darwin's Computer as part of Raising the Bar on August 29th. This is 20 University of Auckland academics presenting their work and wisdom in 10 inner city Auckland bars. So you can have a drink and you can go, shit, that's interesting, and have a chat and ask you questions, yeah?
Absolutely.
So your one is at 6:30 p.m. at the Vodka Room, which is in Ponsonby. It is free entry, but because bars are small places and this is crunchy info, registrations are essential, and you can register at rtbevent.com/Auckland. Thank you so much, Alexei. It's fascinating stuff.
Thank you.
That was Ready, Steady, Learn! Thanks to the University of Auckland, the best university.